drive. All right, so there was the bell, and I've got 9 o'clock on my watch, so time to get going today. We've been talking about our lifelong zeal, and we're ready for lesson number 4 and lesson number 5. If there's anybody that doesn't have a book yet, we got a few more books this morning, so if you need a book, you can pass those around. Make room for everybody. So we're in lesson 4 and lesson number 5 today. Let's go to Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5. Good morning. And we're looking at Peter's response when he first comes and Jesus is calling him and introducing himself. So Luke chapter 5, beginning in verse 4. Luke chapter 5, verse 4. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch." And Simon answered and said, "Master, we worked hard all night and we caught nothing, but I will do as you say and let down the nets." And when they had done this, they enclosed a great quantity of fish, and their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boats for them to come and to help them. And they came and filled both of the boats so that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw that, he fell down at Jesus' feet, saying, "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." For amazement had seized him and all of his companions because of the catch of fish which they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, "Do not fear. From now on, you will be catching men." And when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. They are amazed, but Jesus wants them to be impressed, not afraid. He wants them to actually be excited about this. And yet you have to love Peter's remark in verse 8, "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." I think we would feel that way face to face with Jesus. That we would just be so obvious that we were less than him in every respect. Less than him in holiness, less than him in power. That we just know that we need to be more like him. And that's really what lesson 4 and lesson 5 are all about. It's just some personal reflection. I won't ask you guys to give overly personal information in class this morning. But it is good for personal reflection to say, okay, where do I want to be, and where do I stand face to face with truly how wonderful God is? And so in lesson 4, if you want to come over to page 21, lesson 4, page 21, we're looking at some snapshots of what it would look like to be lukewarm. And you can see that there's a lot of good things here, but also some significant room for improvement. And we want to be able to think about that. Probably my favorite question in this whole lesson is on page 24, question number 2. 14 concepts are used to create this profile of a zealous Christian. What other important traits could be included on this list? See, it may be that you look at this lesson and you go, "Yeah, but Philip, you didn't touch on this side of things." Really, in my mind, what it means to be lukewarm is XYZ. Or it may be that as you work through the exercise on 22 and 23, you think to yourself, okay, those things are good for our zeal, but really you didn't touch on or you didn't include topic XYZ. And so I do want to get some of your insights as we go through this on what you would add to this list, or maybe even what you would take away from this list, things that you would make adjustments. So we'll have some good discussion there. All right, so looking on page 21, lukewarm Christians love God, but not first. Is that a fair statement? Can you think of anybody in the Scriptures that would exemplify that? That lukewarm Christians love God, but not first. Yes, James.
Maybe the rich young ruler.
Okay, definitely. That he has this care for God, even a willingness to obey the commandments of God, but really not first. He's definitely a good example of that. Think of anybody else that maybe showed this attitude in the New Testament?
The young man that he had all these riches, and God told him, you know, to get rid of them.
That's right.
And he went walking away sorrow.
He could have done so much good for himself and for others. And I always think about that young man. He missed out on the best adventure. Right, if he had followed Jesus, that would have been the greatest adventure for him. He would have seen things that would have been just untold, that today we would be jealous to get to see. And he missed out on that. And then what do we miss out on if we're not following God with zeal? What do we miss out on if we're holding on to worldly things? I also think of Demas. right? That Demas was partnered with Paul, and yet he forsakes Paul, loving this present world.
So how about Ananias and Sapphira? Just think how beneficial they could have been in the church.
That's right. That's right. And there's nothing wrong with their gift, but their deception. You know, the lies about this gift and the way that they were thinking of the world more than God. That was a big problem. Right? You're looking at me crazy. Do you think you just... You're like, there is something wrong with that gift. We okay? We're on the same page. Okay. Yeah, they would have been a great asset to the church. Great asset to the church. And there was no command that they had to give everything. They could have given everything like Barnabas, but they didn't have to. But they absolutely had to be honest about what they were giving. If they were only going to give half, there's nothing to be ashamed about with that. That's extremely generous. Not many of us could say we've given half of all of our property or anything like that. And so they could have been a great asset, but they were not because they did not love God first. All right, look at the bottom of the page. This one to me is so convicting. The very bottom of page 21. Lukewarm Christians enjoy hearing stories about people who live zealously for God, but the stories never inspire real change and greater zeal in their own lives. That's one to make us look in the mirror. Every preacher alive knows that the church perks up when you tell a good story. I mean, people just, a story. And you can repeat the same sermon 100 times, but don't you repeat a story. Because people will know if you repeat a story. They remember those stories. Sometimes we tell a story about someone and their work overseas. Or we tell a story about someone and a late night study that they had with their teenager when they got baptized and all the good things that kid went on to do in their life. We tell a story and we're like, wow, that is so great. And then we carry on with our life like we don't need to teach anybody the gospel. We carry on with our life and we don't make any real change. The stories even of the scriptures about Paul and his travels, about Barnabas and his encouragement, about women like Ruth and Esther and all these different people, those are not just there for us to have some alternative to HBO. Those are there for us to be more like them. And lukewarm Christians are the ones that go, oh yeah, that's nice for someone else. But zealous Christians look and they say, okay, I'm going to do something about this. Let's come on over to page 22. Lukewarm Christians are often silent about their faith. They set a reasonably good example, but they rarely share the good news in direct and meaningful conversations. In fact, they've become somewhat ashamed to do so. Just calls us to look in the mirror and say, do I speak up? Am I clear about my faith in setting that good example, but then following that up and say, hey, it's not my glory. I'm not just a good person. I'm not just from a good family. I serve a good God, and God expects this behavior of me. Next one on page 22, lukewarm Christians settle into a one-sided religion. They define Christianity either in very personal terms or very doctrinal terms, but they don't integrate personal faith with sound doctrine. That's one I got a lot of feedback on. I did a meeting down in Montgomery, Alabama. And one of the guys came to me at the end of the meeting. He said, I'm glad this week went well, because I was scared. I said, what do you mean you were scared? He said, well, when I think about Paul saying that he was zealous as a Pharisee, Paul was the one that used his zeal as an excuse to beat people over the head with his particular doctrine. He said, I thought that's what the elders had invited you to do for the week. I was like, no, that's not really, you know, why I came this weekend. He's like, yeah, that became clear. He said, and I'm really glad. But there's some truth to that, right? That when Paul is so, he says, more extremely zealous for the traditions of his ancestors. Not just zealous, but more extremely zealous for the traditions of his ancestors. He used that to drive persecution. See, our zeal doesn't just need to be lopsided or one-sided the way Paul's was initially. There needs to be this integration between sound doctrine and personal faith. This is that kind of zeal that does take the beam out of your own eye before trying to get the speck out of somebody else's eye, right? We need to have that integrated kind of zeal. All right, and then the last one there. Lukewarm Christians lean on their own strength instead of putting their full faith in God. Are there any things that you guys, as you read through this, you thought, you know, I would add this description? When I think of the lukewarm Christians or the lukewarm attributes of the Scriptures, I think we need to include something else here. Anything come up to you guys as you were studying this lesson? Yes, ma'am.
I thought about talents, the gifts that you have. You may think they were just for work, but they actually see how you can use those to glorify God.
Fantastic.
Singing or artistry.
Great. So lukewarm Christians have these talents, and maybe they use these talents in secular pursuits, but they don't use them in their spiritual pursuits. That can make us look warm. That's a great comment. Great comment. Anybody else? Yes, sir?
I think sometimes maybe we're quick to judge people that they're lukewarm when we really don't know all that they're doing and the type of person that they are. And I think Philip doesn't have to mean just being an extroverted person that's verbalizing their praise of God and being, you know, trying to engage people in that manner.
Very good. Very good. So I'm sure that we have visitors from time to time that come in and go, these people are just dead. You know, but they don't know, and we could go somewhere else and say, those people are just dead, but we don't really know, and so we have to be very careful about that. Great point. Great point. All right, well, let's go to the positive side here on 22 and 23. Some of these comments that describe zealous people. So I'll have my two, and I want to ask this question from whatever that is, page 24, question number two. What other factors stand out to you? Maybe as you look through this and you thought about all these different concepts, these ways that zeal could be manifested in our heart and in our lives, did anything show up in your mind that, hey, how come he didn't include this? What might have been missing there? Anything missing there? Question number two from page... Yes, all the positive things that you would rank yourself on. If there's anything there, you're like, hey, how come he didn't give me a little credit for this?
I'm surprised there wasn't a blank. I mean, you talked about in the dorm, but I'm surprised there wasn't a blank about teaching others.
Very good. All right. So teaching others. I see a hand going up. Yes.
There was the one about the physically hungry and poor and in jail, and I thought perhaps one on the spiritually hungry and
poor. Hey guys, like, this doesn't hurt my feelings, okay? I'm not taking this as a criticism. There's supposed to be some things that are not on this list. Yes, Katie?
I think that's probably just a reflection of my own personal stage in life, but, and then it may be implied in all sorts of things, but just specifically towards parenting.
Great, and James?
I was just thinking about all the one another passages in the Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
About the zeal to be with one another.
Very good. So anything kind of there, that hospitality side and the one another connection. So one that I have on my list that I look back and I'm like, I can't believe I left that out. Prayer. There's not very much on this list about prayer. And that should be a bigger part. You know, a bigger part of maybe how we evaluate our own sense of devotion to the Lord. Anything else that you guys had? And this is one for me, one-time moments. Unique moments that call for greater manifestations of zeal than our everyday life. We see that with Jesus. When he was in the temple and he's cleansing his father's house, that called for more than when he was just sitting around the campfire with the 12 apostles, right? When he's dying on the cross, that calls for more. When David is fighting Goliath, that calls for more. And it's not that he doesn't have zeal when he's writing the Psalms or when he's leading the nation, but there are those moments in life that they just call for more. And where we are tested and we want to bring our very best. And so the idea that, well, you haven't had one of those in 10 years, so maybe you're not zealous, that's not accurate. Just because you haven't been called into one of those situations recently doesn't mean that you don't have a zeal for the Lord in some of the other ways that maybe show up in a more daily basis or more heart-based. So let's just talk about this in some generalities at first. When you're looking at page 22 and 23, and you've got these 14 different characteristics, things that we need to be able to do to draw near to God. I'll tell you how I felt the first time that I graded myself on this. Number one, I wasn't really happy. And even to the point that I was like, well, have I just totally blown this? You know, because I can't be that bad of a guy. And then it's been interesting to me to come back and teach this lesson over a series of years. Because the very first time I did it, I gave myself a really low score. And then, you know, a couple weeks went by, and I was going through it again, and I gave myself a better score, and I thought, okay, well, some of this is just going to depend on if you're tired or what kind of mood you're in and how you feel like ranking yourself at any given time, and that's realistic. But then I sat down, and I went through and said, okay, so where did I really score the lowest? And I have to admit that there were areas that I just was at fault, that I significantly needed to work on those areas. So I said, okay, so I'm going to work on this. Like, I can't ask other people to work on these areas if I don't. And that's been really enriching for me. And so I don't stand here and claim that this is a perfect list in any way. But having not gotten the score that I wanted, my score has gone up, my score has gone down, my score has gone up, my score has gone down. But I've got in my notes on the bottom, in the last 2 years, I've pushed myself to be intentional in some of these areas. And if nothing else, I feel less guilty. I feel less guilty that I've not neglected some people that really have nothing to give me in return for whatever kindness I show to them. And I feel less guilty that I've spent more time in intentional prayer or more time in intentional scripture reading. And I feel less guilty that I've let fewer opportunities slip through my fingers when I've tried to tell someone about the gospel. Even if they just slammed the door in my face, I've at least tried. And I would want that for you guys. I would want you to be able to pick out the two or three areas where you're like, okay, you know, he may be wrong about these others, but this is one where, yeah, I can genuinely admit I need to make some progress. Or maybe it's one of these over here that you want to add. You're like, that's something I know I need to focus on. Where you could just be warmer, where you could just be doing more there, not only out of a sense of guilt, but out of this sense that God is worthy, and that we don't want to be a lukewarm Christian, that we don't want to have what we project and what we say be different from who we really are. And so I hope that that's going to be really valuable for you in this particular lesson. So let me ask you question number one on page 24. Question number one. What score would you like to achieve over the next 12 months? And what areas from this lesson do you need to improve? You don't need to tell me your areas. But is there somebody here that would be open enough, and we're just in a safe class with friends, is there somebody here that would be open enough to say, I would like my score to be in the 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s? Is there somebody that thought about this and has made kind of a personal commitment to make some improvement there? Anybody got a number they want to throw out there, a range even? Yes, James?
Definitely in the 90s.
You want to try to get into those 90s. There you go. Getting into those 90s. My range, I want it to be between 80 and 85. I was just like, I got to get between 80 and 85 and trying to get there. What else?
I was going to say, it's helpful because I know the areas and I know I can get to those areas.
Yeah, you so know you can do this.
That's why the number's just because it's 90. I know where that's a deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I can work on that.
Yeah, I mean, when you give yourself like a 2 or a 4, you're like, okay, I know that can be a 5 or a 6. I know that it can. And so there's some change there. Anybody else want to throw something out?
Let me ask a question.
Yes, sir.
Mine was extremely high, and I don't think it's... but the way the questions are like, I seek to please God. Of course I do that.
Right.
Do I do it all the time? How do you take the test? That's what I embrace servanthood? Sure.
Right.
I embrace servanthood.
Well, you said you're one of the shepherds.
do I always do it?
No.
Yeah, well, see, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
I can agree that I agree
with you.
All the time.
Sure.
I seek to embrace God as this servanthood.
Yes, sir.
I think I need to rescore like Ken, too, because now maybe the scoring thing with the always and usually there was a big difference in as you start going down. So maybe we need to look at it from another direction.
Well, you know, that's my twin brother. He was like, I can imagine sitting in a classroom where somebody that's been a Christian for about 6 months would have had the highest score in the class, right? Because they would go, oh, yeah, I do this, you know? And then you can imagine sitting in that same classroom where someone else had been a Christian for 20 years, like, oh, I'm a terrible person, you know? And that's not the point. This really is extremely personal, and it's just an exercise for you to go back really to the scripture references. I was intentional about putting a scripture reference with each one of these and going, am I living up to, well, you know, what God has asked of me? And I think there is that personal judgment between, well, what does often mean, or what does usually mean, or what does always mean? Because nobody does everything always, right? But we do care about these things, and we have those right motivations. So I'm not sure that I can give you much help on how to take this, other than that it's for your own reflection and your own benefit.
Bill,
yes, ma'am.
There was a time when I used to, you know, like they say, you visit the prison.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when I did all this, but I haven't been to a prison.
Right. And you know, Jesus doesn't expect it. That comes back to the one-time moment. There's a season of life that you're going to be able to do that. There's a season of life that you're not. Later in the book, there's a story. I don't remember what fake name I gave her, but I'll tell you her real name was Carrie. And Sister Carrie in Florida was just awesome. She was in an industrial accident with both legs crushed. And she did very well just to get to church in a walker. And I will never forget her. She was making a very similar statement to Miss Katie. And she said, when I could, I did. That's what I want to be able to stand before God and say. When I could, I did. And I think that's very much in keeping with the woman that anointed Jesus before his death, right? That everywhere the gospel is proclaimed, she was to be remembered because she did what she could in that moment with what she had. And she didn't have to go die on the cross. He was going to take care of that part. But she had that perfume. She could anoint him. And when she could, she did. And really, that's what this lesson is about, is can we be those people that do it while we can and use those opportunities while they are there. Let me ask you this one. Question number 3 on page 24. Besides becoming useless in our Christian influence, what other negative consequences would come from being lukewarm? You know, if we're just a church full of lukewarm Christians, what are the negative consequences from that?
Complacency.
God is not glorified the way he deserves and is honored with. Yes?
I thought more even in worldly terms, but
you can feel like a liability. There you go. Yeah, so you become the liability. What else? Yes, people fall away. Absolutely. So those talents get hidden. Suffering and injustice continues that we should have been defending, that we should have been doing something about. That could be spiritual or physical, right? The spiritual suffering. It sets a terrible example for our kids, terrible example for the next generation. If all they see are lukewarm Christians, we would never want that. So we have to just kind of think about who do I want to be? And then lesson number 5, page 25, is going to help us take these steps towards making some growth here. I love teaching lesson number 5. This to me is one of the really fun lessons because this is to be quick. This is for you to think about this week and next week, just the next 2 weeks, kind of what changes do you need to make? What can you do to get out of your life those things that you know are having a negative influence? So here's my example, and this is not like to toot my own horn, but this is just my example. So when I was in college, my roommate and I, Bradley, we loved us a good Jim Carrey comedy, all right? Which Tracy can't stand Jim Carrey. But anyway, so we loved us a good Jim Carrey comedy. And I don't even remember, it was Liar Liar, where he has to tell the truth as a lawyer, all right? So I was watching this movie all the time. We had it on VHS. But I can just remember that curse words were going through my mind more often during the day, because I'd heard him in that movie. And I watched that movie so many times. And it just came to a point that I was like, okay, maybe other people can enjoy this movie and maybe it just goes in one ear and out the other, but I can't. And I went and got a hammer and I smashed the VHS tape and I put it in the trash. Now, why did I smash that VHS tape? Because for me, if I had left it sitting on the VCR beside the TV, I was going to watch it again. No question. I would watch it again. I did not have the self-control to just like leave it there and leave it alone. And I didn't really feel right giving it to Goodwill that it would be a stumbling block for somebody else when it had clearly been a stumbling block for me. So really the only option for me was a Stanley hammer. That's what I needed. I have zero regret about that. I still remember some funny things from that movie, but my life is better with less of that movie. Not more. That's what Lesson 5 is all about. It's just for you to find those things that your life is better without them. I have a friend that told me he just started driving home from work a different way. Just drive home from work a different way. He didn't need to go past some of the places that he was going past on the way home from work. And even though it took him an extra 15 minutes, he just didn't go that way to work anymore. He was better for it. Because that's what Lesson 5 is about. Just finding those things that you can change so that your zeal is not constantly under attack and being pulled away. Look at page 25 here on warming up. Page 25 on warming up. The most important environment that you can purify is your heart. Proverbs 4:23 says, "Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flows the springs of life." Consider Luke 6:45 and summarize why it is so important to purify your heart. So let's come over to Luke 6. We're in Luke 5. Let's come to Luke 6. Verse 45. "The good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth what is good. And the evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth what is evil. For his mouth speaks from that which fills his heart." So what do you think, guys? What do you put there for page 25? Why is it so important for us to purify our hearts?
It's out of the hearts, our actions.
Very good.
Our body, everything about us follows what's really in our hearts.
Very good. So what's in our heart? It's going to show up. There's no hiding it. There's no pretending. It will show up. What else? Other things you guys have about purifying our hearts. I put our words and our reputation. I love the repetition in verse 45. The good man, the good treasure, brings forth what is good. Good, 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 or evil, evil, evil. You know, it's going to impact our reputation. It's going to impact what we say. It's going to have this big impact on other people. Look back up at the verse that's kind of the kickoff verse. "I will bring the third part through the fire, refine them as silver is refined, test them as gold is tested. They will call on my name, and I will answer them and will say, they are my people, and they will say, the Lord is my God." Isn't that the declaration we want in our heart? The Lord is my God. That we would have this heart that has been refined the way that we refine silver. I mean, we heat that ore up to get all the impurities out. We heat that ore up so we would have that pure silver or that pure gold. Come back to Malachi. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 3. If somebody would read this one for us. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 3. It's very similar to Zechariah. Malachi 3 verse 3. Who wants to read 3:3? Okay, thanks, Danny.
"He will sit as a refiner and purifier of silver, and he will purify the sons of Levi and refine them like gold and silver, and they will bring offerings in righteousness to the Lord."
Isn't that great? Look at the result at the end of verse 3. When they have been purified, then they're going to worship God with righteousness. That's something that God is looking for. Of all the consequences, if we stay lukewarm, we're not able to offer to God worship of righteousness. But when we've been purified, when we've been refined, then we're able to offer that worship that is that He's worthy of and that is very pleasing to Him. So come back to 2 Kings. 2 Kings chapter 23. And we'll look at this snapshot of Josiah in the work that he did to purify the nation. 2 Kings chapter 23, verse 4. The king commanded Hilkiah the high priest and the priests of the second order and the doorkeepers to bring out of the temple of the Lord all the vessels that were made for Baal, for Asherah, and for all the hosts of heaven. And he burned them outside of Jerusalem in the fields of Kidron and carried their ashes to Bethel. There's an emphasis here on not just destroying it, but not even leaving the ashes, not even leaving the remnant there, but get them out of the country. Take them to the extreme edge of the country and, you know, find the line between us and the others and dump it over the line. Get this away. So those physical objects, and that kind of goes back to my Jim Carrey movie, and maybe there's just something that you need to make a change with, some physical object, something that's a stumbling block that you can make a change with. And then verse 5. He did away with the idolatrous priests whom the kings of Judah had appointed to burn incense in the high places in the cities of Judah and in the surrounding areas of Jerusalem, those who burned incense to Baal, to the sun, to the moon, and to the constellations, and to all the hosts of heaven. Those guys are out of here. Because he knows that they're a bad influence. And we need to be able to identify the people in our lives that are that negative influence, that they bring out the worst in us instead of bringing out the best in us. Whenever I'm doing premarital counseling for young couples, that's one of the things I always am looking at and trying to get them to think about. Does this person bring out the best in you? Does this person encourage you and push you to really give your best, to be your best? Do you feel inspired to be a better person because of the love that you have for your future spouse? So that's something we should appreciate about our spouse. Here in verse 5, it's the exact opposite. These people are constantly a stumbling block to idolatry and to worldliness. Verse 7 through 10, I put in here about the places that would cause you to sin. This is another funny one for me. But when we first got married, I realized that we were watching way too much HGTV. And it was just fueling discontentment, right? It was just way too much HGTV that was fueling discontentment, because you had all these nice gifts that everyone had given us when we got married and no discretionary budget money. No. But we're watching HGTV all the time, and then you're walking through Home Depot and you're going, we need that, and we need that, and we need that. And need was completely inaccurate. And so we just had this thing to say, wait a minute. Every time we go to Lowe's or every time we're turning on another HGTV show, we're not rejoicing in all that we already have. We're not really giving thanks here for what God has provided. So that was something that we just had to make a change. And again, we were better for it. And then verse 11. Somebody read verse 11.
He removed the horses that the kings of Judah had dedicated to the sun at the entrance of the house of the Lord, by the chamber of Nathan-Melech, the chamberlain, which was in the precinct. And he burned the chariots of the sun with fire.
Now, you guys have probably heard me say before, the horses were the nuclear weapons of the ancient world. Horses and chariots were your number one military asset. And so I can just imagine these chariots with some big sun idol on the side, and I can just see some kings ripping that off and sticking on a picture of the Torah, right? Or sticking on a picture of two tablets, like it's the Ten Commandments, and these have been repurposed and rededicated, and now they're part of the Lord's army because we trust in the Lord, but we've got our horses. Nope. Not Josiah. Horses are out of here. Chariots, they're out of here. Because these have been used for wicked things. They've been used for evil things. They are associated in the minds of the people with trusting in pagan strength. And Josiah is not going to be that kind of king. And so then we have to think to ourselves, not just these influences like music or movie, but maybe what are these things that we might be putting our trust in? What are these things that we might be putting our confidence in? And is there some kind of change that needs to take place so that I can say, no, my confidence is in the Lord. My trust is in the Lord. Although it's not exactly a trust issue, I will tell you my other funny story for this one. The passing benefits is how we emphasize this on page 26. The passing benefits. I'm the weirdo that used to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go read a tech blog about the next Apple iPhone that was going to come out. You know, I know that there are women that when they walk out and they see their husband on the laptop at 3 o'clock in the morning, they're really worried about what he might be looking at. Tracy is not worried at all. She's like, you are up reading about Apple rumors again? It was like a problem. Okay, it was a problem. And so I had to say, like, this is harmless, right? Like, there's nothing evil about this, but this is unhealthy. I don't need to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to find out about the features of the next iPhone. They're going to go from 4 inches to 4.5 inches. Shocker. You know, you don't really need to be spending this. And I just realized that even though this is a perfectly innocent hobby, it was taking way too much time. And I think a lot of us could admit that we have hobbies that we start spending more time on than we care to admit, right? That this is taking more time away from our family or more time away from those things that are really valuable. And although it has a passing benefit of recreation and relaxation, we need to scale it back. We need to get it back into a reasonable and a healthy domain. And so maybe just for you, for lesson 5, there's something that you can walk away from. There's something that you can scale back. There's some adjustments that you can make to make sure that your attention is going where it is most needed. So look at page 27 and the side column. What positive outlets for your energy and time could you participate in more after purifying your heart and your life of sinful distractions? What would you just be thrilled to say? At the end of 2017, I gave more time, I gave more attention to these good works. What kind of good works would you love to give more attention to in 2017?
So much study.
Okay. Definitely study and prayer. Reading our Bible more, to know it, to search out its depths. Very good, yeah. So like some way that you could personally be involved in some community organization or way you could be involved in serving others, those that might be new to your circle. Very good. Others? Things that you would love to say? Some more good works? So you guys know that Tracy does fundraising for Sacred Selections, for adoptions. That has been such a rewarding thing for our family. The story is she saw these pictures of orphans, and we're like going to bed one night, and she's like, I can't get these out of my mind. I've got to do something. I was like, well, honey, if you feel that strongly, like, write him a check for $200 or $300. Like, let's do something. She's like, oh, it's going to be more than that. I was like, more? What do you mean? You know? And so that was 5 years ago, and then she's doing all these fundraisers, and it's just been the most rewarding, most enriching thing. And for our family, the fundraiser was always in October. So, like, our life just stopped as soon as VBS was over in June. And it just took over. It just took over the living room. It just took over her schedule. It took over everything. And we have zero regret. It has been so exciting for me to see her do that and for the difference she's been able to make. She told us yesterday, one of the first kids we helped 5 years ago, the little girl just turned 10 last week. And so it has been such a blessing for our family. This is one I have on my list. Like, I could definitely be redirecting some energy towards helping them grow, towards guiding them to make sure, you know, that they always have their lessons and all those kind of things. A few years ago, I did a small amount of fundraising for a clean water well in Africa, and that water project was something that I just really enjoyed doing. It was a very non-denominational kind of thing, but it was a water project. I have that on my list. There's so many good opportunities out there. So many ways that we can make a difference. We don't need to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning with some hobby. We need to be resting, and we need to be getting after the work that brings glory to God. And then I asked you guys on page 27, who are some of the most zealous Christians you know? Somebody just tell me one, maybe somebody that's not a member here, that you just, they have been an inspiration to you, one of the most zealous Christians that you know. Tell us a little bit about them. Yes.
My grandmother.
Your grandmother.
She always told me to look at the roots you set at the proverbial. Those are things that you can do in certain stages of your life, and not the only thing. Your main purpose is to get your children and your family. But she, I've watched her, and she's still strong.
It is so, we have such a special blessing to have people like that in our lives. Who else?
I put you on my list.
But yeah, I did somebody not at this church.
I think that you're a great example for us in this church because you have approached things somewhat differently as far as the way that you present your enthusiasm in everything that you do when you greet people. So everyone has their own talent and the way they do things. It's just that you have a special approach, and I really appreciate that.
Well, I put down a guy named Valerio. I know I've used him as a sermon illustration, that his parents had him taken to the psychologist because they thought he was nuts to be a preacher instead of to take their very successful family business. And so they were like, we got to have this guy checked out. But no, he just loved the gospel. And the psychologist said, he believes it, and he's living it. That's the most sane client I've ever had. And that's what it should be true of us. Like, we believe this, and we live this, and our life is so much richer there. Okay, people not of this church. You want to mention? Yes.
The thing about my grandfather and my grandmother. My grandfather said, he has the super dramatic example of back in the 50s, he was the treasurer of the church, and they wanted him to write a check to somebody that wasn't right, and he turned it in, and he said, I'm not going to write this check. This will not be on me. And, like, that's so dramatic, but then he was 92 when he died, and up until a few weeks before, he and Grammy would come and get them. They would be on their little walkers. I think they could still drive. So they would get on their walkers, get into their car, drive to church, and there were a couple of young people who would come and get them out, help them out of the car, park their car for them. So when he was young, I mean, I guess he did what he could.
When he could.
So super dramatic, like when he was young, but onto very undramatic, unglamorous, but still, like, just super, like, lifelong.
So let me tell you, so the most expensive thing, well, the second most expensive thing we've ever auctioned, we did an auction, a safari to Africa, so that raised a lot. But the second most expensive thing we ever auctioned was jars of jam that probably didn't taste very good from a little old lady that was 90% blonde. But when we got up and we said, this is her jam, I mean, people pay like $700 for a jar of jam, and she gave us 10 jars. Like, she did what she could, right? She did what she could, and it made. And then somebody very generous did what they could, and together it made all the difference. Made all the difference. Any other stories before the next bell rings?
Margaret Head.
Okay.
Many of the Christians know her. She's at the Roswell Church. She'll be 91 on Thursday. She's absolutely the most zealous Christian I know, despite all the obstacles in her life. She's had 3 major crises last year. Health, grandson dying, and a great grandson
in trouble. Yeah.
And her faith is just amazing. And she always sees the positive.
That's wonderful. Yeah, and we are just so blessed by those people. Just the way the first century church was blessed to know the apostles and to know Barnabas and to know Titus and to know these other people. We are so, or Phoebe, to know these people. Page 28, question number 2. Josiah's reforms impacted the whole kingdom. Who will be most affected by your choice to eliminate corrupt influences? I put the kids, of course, and those that we help. You know, to think about the difference that Tracy's been able to make for these orphans, that's just awesome. The local church that I preach with, I know that there's attention on me, and that you know, the preacher friends that I have that have fallen into very public sins such as adultery, I see the devastation that that's brought to those congregations. One of my buddies was getting his master's, I guess, in counseling. And they talked about that when the preacher falls in some very public sin, the church often responds the way a rape victim responds. Because it's a complete betrayal, there's complete powerlessness, there's long-standing hurt. And I think of myself, I'm like, if I don't do this right, there's lots of people that I hurt. And now I think about, like, the last 8 years in Lexington, some of those kids, like, I'm their preacher. Like, they grew up with Philip. And if I'm not living right, what that does to those kids. I think all of us could say that, whether it's our own kids, or if it's our nieces and nephews, if it's our close friends that we depend on, like, the people that we know, they are going to be deeply impacted for good or for bad to our life. And so we just have to take the trash out. We've got to be like Josiah. And if Josiah could do this at a relatively young age, how much more, with all of this support, should we not be really serious about that purity that God is looking to bring for us? Any final comments before the last step? Yes,
James. One of the things is reading from reading about Josiah that we read and I noticed is that some of the things that were destroyed started back in Solomon's day, in Jeroboam's day.
They've been there forever.
They've been there forever. So these things are still an impediment. And you have to be serious about destroying these things and get them away. They had an effect hundreds of years later because they were not dealt with. And if we don't deal with those things and remove them out of our lives, they'll be an impediment to us and our children and whoever else that we might have an influence with.
Amen.
In God's name, of course.
That's right.
He says we'll be blasphemy.
Excellent. Excellent. Page 27, this middle section right here, I did want to... You know, it's not enough just to rid everything. It's worth noting you've got to replace it with proper practices. When you are seeking to incorporate proper practice, pay special attention to the people with whom you are surrounding yourself and the manner in which they perform the tasks. As they were observing the Passover, that had to be a huge encouragement, right? That they were looking around and go, oh, you're willing to do this right? You're willing to do this right? Good, let's go do that together. Thank you guys for your participation this morning.
Are we covering next time?
Six and seven.
Six and seven.
Six and seven for next time.